Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January 8th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A record high temperatures in Zimbabwe and most parts of the Southern African region start taking a toll on people, livestock and crops.
At most times, you do experience some of these high temperatures as a result of the undersettlement. And it has been very intense, actually.
Teachers react angrily to Professor Jonathan Moyo's suggestions that some of them don't deserve state bonuses.
And villagers stage protests after failing to access food aid at a grain marketing depot.
People are demonstrating just because there is rampant corruption here in at Mutasa GMB. People are being given inputs on partisan grounds, on political grounds.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Record high temperatures in Zimbabwe and most parts of the Southern African region are now taking a toll on people, livestock and crops. In its latest report, the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FuseNet, says Zimbabwe's area cropped for the 2015 and 2016 season is expected to be below average due to dry conditions. The report says the seasonal forecast update for January to March 2016 now indicates a high likelihood of average to below average rains throughout Zimbabwe. According to FuseNet, this updated forecast elevates chances of mid-season dry spells and or an early cessation of rains this season, potentially affecting crop and livestock condition. FuseNet is a leading provider of early warning and analysis on food insecurity and was created by USAID in 1985. Meteorological Services Department Head of Forecasting, Tich Zinyemba, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the extreme weather conditions are a cause for concern, though relief might come to some parts of the country tomorrow.
It's a variety of things, actually, but typically the cause of this is that we are experiencing very dry weather. And in the atmosphere, there's what we call an anticyclone. Now, an anticyclone is a tendency of driving dry and warm air. And therefore, at most times, you do experience some of these high temperatures as a result of the undersettlement. And it has been very intense, actually, for your information. And this is actually affecting the whole sub-region. So there's always confusion that is this dry spell or these high temperatures, they being caused by the El Nino or something else? There is it's not the El Nino, really, that is driving these dry and hot conditions. It is the anticyclone that is sitting over most of the sub-region. And, of course, as I said, it is associated with substrate air, and substrate air, it tends to be warm, and therefore it perpetuates these high temperatures.
When do you expect it to cool off?
Well, we are expecting some respite over the weekend. We are expecting some light showers over the country, starting, of course, in the western parts of the country, mainly Matabeleland provinces, then into Masvingo, starting from Saturday, maybe extending further into Monday. But these thunder showers are not expected to produce much rain. But, of course, because of the cloudiness that is associated with them, that will bring some welcome respite.
That was Tich Zinyemba, Meteorological Services Department Head Forecasting, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Civil servants have reacted angrily to suggestions by Higher Education Minister Professor Jonathan Moyo that bonuses for state workers should not be taken as some form of entitlement. In one of his latest tweets, Moyo noted that some civil servants normally leave their jackets in offices and then expect bonuses at the end of the year. David Zatsunga, chairperson of the College Lecturers Association of Zimbabwe, or COLAZ, says though they cannot dispute the fact that there are workers who may be drinking beer at work, the government must still honor its promise of paying their 13th check. Professor Moyes' tweet came at a time when some civil servants are threatening to down tools if they are not paid bonuses by at the end of this month. Zatsunga tells Studio 7 that if the minister feels some employees do not deserve bonuses, the government has mechanisms and means to deal with them.
You cannot dispute the fact that there could be workers who drink at work or probably have a tendency to do all sorts of misconduct. But when all is said and done, you don't but to be dealt within the manner of denying the bonus. This is a lot of other instruments that are in place to punish workers who have transgressed in that manner, where they breach certain rules and the disciplinary court is there to take care of that. Otherwise, we believe in the best interest of justice, and I think it is historical as well that workers have always enjoyed a 13th check.
Some organizations have already made it public that their members are not willing to go back to work when schools open next week because of the bonus issue. What's your position?
As College Lecturers Association of Zimbabwe, we operate in colleges. We are a very small organization by virtue of numbers. What we are doing now is we are waiting for colleges to open so that we can have broader consultation with our members to find out whether they are also willing to come on board with the other workers who have seen to make their position clear. What I would say is it's something that we would wish, if it were possible, that whatever we action we take as workers, this become collective. We know very well that we can only be effective if we are united as workers.
That was David Zatsunga, chairperson of the College Lecturers Association of Zimbabwe, speaking with us from Mashingom. Professor Moyo was not reachable for comment.
Meanwhile, teachers say they are worried by reports that they won't go on leave until further notice. A teacher based in Masvingo, Wellington Choruma, tells Studio 7 he was due to go on leave, but has been informed that the district education office is blocking teachers from going on leave. Efforts to get comment from the Ministry of Education were fruitless as they were not answering their calls. Studio 7 sought the view of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe on this issue. This is what one of the top officials, Dakaba Firajou, had to say.
We are encouraging members of the teaching fraternity to ensure that they claim their rights, because leave is a right, it's not a privilege. These are days that have accrued, that are a right for any person who wants to go on leave. But should they meet resistance or a lot of uninformed officials in the Ministry of Education, we encourage them also to come through our offices and we can liaise with the DOs as well as the provincial officials and ensure that the teachers who want to go on leave should go on leave. But what we are aware of is that the government has no money and the government now does not want to employ relief teachers to replace those who have gone on leave. And we are saying every school or every official at a school must ensure that the school runs smoothly after the relevant teachers have gone on leave. And so the teachers cannot be held at ransom to stay at the school when they have reached their maximum days in terms of accruing of these days. So we encourage a win-win situation where those who have accrued particular maximum days are allowed to go on leave.
That was Takawa Firajou of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Uye. About 100 supporters of the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Changirai, have staged peaceful protests at a grain marketing board depot in Mutasa District, Manicaland Province, complaining about unfair distribution of food aid and agricultural inputs. The demonstrators, who were singing songs denouncing the government and local GMB leadership, waved placards urging the state-controlled entity to distribute all goods fairly to local people. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo reports.
Business came to a standstill today at the GMB depot when the angry protesters blocked the main entrance of the facility, claiming that they are fed up of being discriminated by the GMB managers. They claimed that only supporters of President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party are receiving free maize seed, food aid, and other items. 65-year-old Esther Mukoi, who was part of the demonstrators, said they used to receive goods being distributed by the GMB when there was a government of national unity. Mukoi claimed that they no longer get anything due to the fact that they are MDCT supporters. Another Mtasa villager, Allen Mutema, claimed that the situation has been worsened by alleged corruption at the GMB depot.
People are demonstrating just because there is rampant corruption here at Mutasa GMB. People are being given inputs on partisan grounds, on political grounds. Most of the people who are benefiting are from ZANU-PF, and yet those from the oppositions, they are not even benefiting anything.
His views were echoed by Simon Mutimwi, who added that they are staging a peaceful protest to show authorities that everyone needs food aid and other items being distributed by the GMB.
Quite a number of things are happening here. People are given seeds according to political sides. Most ZANU-PF people are benefiting, and those who belong to the MDC are not getting anything. So they've come, maybe there was something that was going to be given, and up to now, nothing has been dished out.
Another protester, Patrick Chitio, said it appeared as if it is now a crime to be a member of the MDC, as all backers of Morgan Tsvangirai's party are being blocked from getting agricultural inputs, maize and other goods at the GMB.
There have been complaints all around this district. From every ward, people are complaining of being segregated on political grounds. Now we decided and coordinated people. We said, everyone who has got a problem, let's come together to the GMB where the inputs are coming from. Then we demonstrate.
Villager Isaac Pangeti further noted that disabled people in the region are also being denied food handouts by the GMB. Pangeti said their absence from political party gatherings is seen by some ruling party supporters as being sympathetic to the MDCT and other opposition parties.
Often the disabled ones, they don't normally attend some meetings, so they are regarded as opposition. If you don't attend a meeting called by the ZANU-PF, then you are regarded as opposition. Then they give these inputs to one family. The father gets, he signs for inputs. The mother gets, she signs. The daughter and the sons. One family can get 5 bags instead of sharing them.
Mutasa Central member of the National Assembly, Trevor Sarwaka, explained that the protest was sparked by the continued abuse of local people, especially those linked to the MDC team.
I think this demonstration is a result of the persistent disregard of government policy in terms of distributing any initiatives from the government.
Mutasa District Administrator Tendai Kapenzi refused to comment and referred all questions to Manikaland Provincial Administrator Fungai Mbetsa, who was not reachable on his mobile phone. Sarwaka later on Friday held a meeting with GMB senior officials, Kapenzi, the police and ZANU-PF officials, in which they agreed to engage all relevant elected officials when distributing any GMB handouts. Reporting for Studio 7 in DC, Mutasa, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
Some Zimbabwean cross-border traders have criticized the government's decision to cut travelers' rebate from $300 to $200, saying it will further erode their ability to purchase affordable goods across the borders. They argue that the government is milking dry an already overburdened taxpayer instead of creating a conducive climate to attract foreign direct investment. The latest move comes barely a year after the government removed a rebate on basic commodities bought outside the country. Indications are that cross-border transport operators, commonly known as Omalaita, will be seriously affected by this move. They ferry goods collected from Zimbabweans living in South Africa, Botswana, and other countries.
Coming up,
we will take a closer look at how Zimbabweans can tackle the HIV stigma.
When they do disclose their status, people will also become free to go and get tested.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A Swiss woman living in northern Mali has been kidnapped from her home for the second time in 4 years. Residents and officials in Timbuktu say gunmen entered the home of Beatrice Tokley Friday morning and took her away. There was no immediate claim of responsibility.
The U.S. economy had a net gain of 292,000 jobs in December, a sign that the world's largest economy is growing at a solid pace in spite of recent global stock market turmoil and other headwinds.
An Islamic State fighter is reported to have executed his mother in the Syrian city of Raqqa after she asked him to leave the organization, according to a monitoring group.
And Michel Platini, once seen as a likely successor to depose the FIFA president Sepp Blatter, has announced he will not try to run in the February 26 election for the presidency of the world body governing soccer. Police have released Newsday newspaper deputy editor Ngaba Machazi, journalist Xolisani Ncube, and a representative of their company Alpha Media Holdings, Sifikile Thabete, who were arrested for allegedly writing falsehoods. The three staffers, who are represented by lawyer Taona Nyamukara, are facing allegations of communicating or publishing false statements prejudicial to the state after publishing a story in the newspaper's Wednesday edition titled CIO Secretly Get Bonuses. Machazi thanked those people who supported them while they were in police custody. We spoke to lawyer Taona Nyamukura about this issue.
Mr. Ngabe Machazi and Konisani Ngube were released on $200 bail with the normal reporting conditions, and the company's secretary, Sikile Thabete, was released on free bail since she represented the company there. It's not necessary that she be given any restraints.
So when is the trial date?
We were going back to court on the 27th of January.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us about these charges? Why is the state saying that it's not true?
We have not been given any information. It's the point that I've said and repeated. We have not been given any information as to why it is said that the contents of the newspaper article were false, or that my clients would have had any reason to believe as of the time of publication that the contents of the article were false. We were simply given the bold allegation that the contents are false, which allegation my clients obviously deny.
And do they have the evidence to back their claim?
Well, our law does not require my clients to say or prove anything in their defense. The onus rests on the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the contents of the article are false, or that my clients, as of the time of publication, had any reason to know that the contents were false. The onus is on the state. We will actually wait to hear from the state why the allegation is. We will be applying, in terms of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, we have the matter referred to the Constitutional Court. Instructions are to challenge the constitutionality of the crime itself.
That was a lawyer Taona Nyamukura speaking to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
The Zimbabwe National Network of People Living with HIV says there is need to continuously raise awareness for people to know their HIV status as part of efforts to reduce the HIV stigma. We have more details from our correspondent Safari Njema.
In its latest report, titled The Zimbabwe Stigma Index Research Report, ZNNP Plus says it is important to engage government, the private sector and individuals in targeted interventions to address sources of discrimination against people living with HIV. National AIDS Council Communications Officer Tadiwa Nyatangapfupa says the ZNP Plus report is an important indicator of the need for people to disclose their status.
There are people who are mainly looked up to in society by virtue of their positions they hold
either maybe as headmasters, as teachers, as pastors. So for them now to go back and tell the people who look up to them that they are HIV positive, they will think the people are going to feel badly let down. So those people, in most cases, will not easily disclose their status.
Tadiwa says those who are influential in society are critical in changing negative perceptions about HIV.
When they do disclose their status, people will also become free to go and get tested and to disclose their results, because they will say, if this popular footballer, popular musician, or this pastor, he has disclosed that he is HIV positive, I also can do the same.
But why is disclosure important?
They get into groups, support each other, encourage each other to take their medication as prescribed, and also to share ideas, to share like the proper nutrition to take. But the moment one does not disclose his or her status, a lot of information will pass them.
While HIV-related stigma is still widespread in communities, some people are beginning to come forward to show the importance of revealing one's HIV status. Studio 7 spoke to 49-year-old Barbara Farashashiko, a counselor with ZNNP Plus in Tafara, who has disclosed her status. Farashashiko, who works with 16 support groups in the suburb and is a tuberculosis survivor, says she was thrown out of her matrimonial home when she fell ill in 1985.
I was thinking of my baby boy. And I was also thinking how my in-laws, they were acting. They couldn't accept my condition. They said I was a moving grave. They were stigmatizing me. So I was so stressed. I couldn't recover so early. Then after I was discharged, my parents have to accept me. I have to come to my home. I was put in a wheelbarrow. All the people in the community, they were looking and looking at me. Say, is she going to survive? She's going to die. Look how she is. And look, she's got a baby. She can't make it.
Farashashiko says staying with the parents was very difficult.
I have to sleep together with my mother and my father in the same bedroom because there were no rooms to accommodate me. And I couldn't share with other children because they were afraid that they would be also infected. So I have to use my own room with my parents, and I have to use my own plate, my own cup. Through the awareness that I gave them and the knowledge I teach them, they now understand. TB, you cannot catch TB on a plate. You cannot catch TB on a cup. You cannot catch TB on sharing the same toilet seat or sharing the same blanket.
She says disclosure is therapeutic for someone who is living with HIV.
You should accept what you are. And disclosure is main part of self-stigma. Because once you disclose your status or what you are, even people stigmatize or point a finger at you, it will not worry you because you've disclosed your own status, and that is how I manage my stress.
Farashashiko says she needs $4,500 to undergo an operation because she cannot read or see things in the distance.
I've got a conical cornea problem, so I need a cornea from another person to be donated to me and that operation to be done. And normally here in Zimbabwe, it is not done, but in South Africa. Last time when I visited the eye unit, there were corneas that were donated, but the operation was so expensive.
Farashashiko stays with her daughter-in-law, Cynthia Murenzwi, who says she has learned a lot during support group discussions about the importance of disclosing one's status and understanding HIV issues.
I was very, very young. I used to ignore, I used to stigmatize people. But now I know through my mother-in-law, she taught me very much. I also go to the workshops and learn with other people, hear different ideas. Now I know everything about this stigma and what TB discrimination.
18-year-old Nathan Chihunje, who stays in Tafara, says he has been inspired by Barbara Farashashiko's counseling sessions and work with support groups in the area. Chihunje lost his mother, who was the breadwinner, when he was only 15. He says the experience of caring for her mother taught him to be compassionate towards those living with HIV.
It was difficult because I was the only child in my family. So it was difficult to look for my mother. I was to take over all household jobs, like cleaning the house, washing the plates, clothes, even yourself he was not able to bathe yourself.
Zimbabwe has adopted the fast-track concept of the United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, which aims at ending the HIV pandemic by 2030. The concept outlines a set of targets that would need to be reached by 2020, including 90-90-90, 90% of people living with HIV knowing the HIV status, 90% of people who know their HIV-positive status on treatment, and 90% of people on treatment with suppressed viral loads. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, I am Safari Njema.
And in sports news, a newly elected Zimbabwe Football Association President Philip Chiyangwa is slowly creating friends due to the manner in which he has handled the Warriors. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story.
Some Zimbabweans who were once skeptical and opposed to his election are now singing another tune. They are now backing the flashy businessman only a month after he was elected Zipa boss. This follows the stability in the Warriors camp, in which the players are no longer complaining about poor accommodation, poor food, or non-availability of transport to take them for training, as this has been sorted out. Renowned football analyst Farai Kambamura says Chiyangwa is trying his best to revive the national soccer squad.
Mr. Chiyangwa, so far so good. I wouldn't want to lie. He's proving himself.
The Warriors coach Kalisto Pasua has also been paid his dues, while the players have received all their allowances while in camp. On top of that, the Warriors have also been promised huge bonuses should they do well at this month's African Nations Championships, better known as CHAN. Caps United supporter Johnson Matsiwe says players will perform well if they are given such bonuses.
What is important is money when it comes to football.
The sight of Chiyangwa at the Warriors training ground and later with the Warriors for lunch is proof enough that the businessman wants to convince the doubting Thomases that he is the right man to head Zimbabwean football. Chiyangwa is learning from the past and wants to prove that he's just the opposite of his predecessor Kabe Duwe, who in his 5 years in power allegedly never attended a single Warriors training session. There are some who are now of the opinion that should this continue, the flashy businessman would be accorded another term in office. Chiyangwa's term runs up to 2018, as he is completing the term of the sacked Duwe, who was booted out of office in October following a vote of no confidence by the Zifa Council. However, Kambamura says Chiyangwa should avoid raising the people's expectations and then fail to maintain them.
He should not just shine. We know a new bronze is sweep cleanest, but he should be consistent.
Chiyangwa himself is gloating about what he has done so far, saying there is now some order at Zipa. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our host Gibbs Dube and Blessing Zulu will be talking with listeners and experts about the revised travelers' rebate in Zimbabwe and its likely negativity on millions of Zimbabweans.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Record high temperatures in Zimbabwe and most parts of the southern African region start taking a toll on people, livestock and crops.
Teachers react angrily to Professor Jonathan Moyo's suggestions that some of them don't deserve state bonuses.
And villagers stage protests after failing to access food aid at a grain marketing depot in Manicaland.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.